Wagwan, I go by the name L-O-R-C-O-N, and you're listening to the Sample Access Podcast. Stay tuned.
The Sample Access, administered by Boyega and Nelson.
Yeah, let me try that.
What do we have today on the Sample Access Podcast? We are going back to 1949. Is it 49, 45?
45.
We're going to 63, somewhere in the 60s.
Yeah.
And late 90s, the very last year before the new millennium. So
we're basically traveling in time
today.
Yeah,
we're going all the way back. And I think some backstory about the podcast, if you're a fresh listener. We just tried to like take some of the very special songs from way back and then talk about them again because they have been sampled by some new artists, or maybe it might be 20 years ago that they were sampled. If they are iconic songs and they influence culture, we want to talk about them. So yeah, pretty much all we have done so far on the podcast, we have talked about people like Adio Kunta. We have talked about I don't know if Sonia Ade has been in the conversation. Not yet.
There was one time where we were talking about, I think Ade Okunta, you were asking me about sounds at a particular age in time, like age and time. So, and I was saying stuff about Synchro System, that happens to be one of the first albums to actually leave the shores of Nigeria to become actually a very big album.
Yeah.
But outside the country.
But beyond mentioning, I want us to like refer to Sonny Ade very soon. You know about the episode I'm talking about.
Yes, we talked about Rawls. Rawls.
There is a progression that combines or that is familiar with both of them.
But yeah.
Something from La Rawls also connecting to Sonny Ade music.
Yes.
Who is La Rawls, by the way?
La Rawls, just call him, let's say jazz, mostly jazz music. Jazz people would know him.
60s or 70s?
70s down to the 80s.
Yeah, just to mention a few more people that we have touched on the podcast. Now, it wouldn't matter class or time because we can go any which way.
I mean, like, it's the vibe now, basically.
Kojo Fons, for instance.
Kojo Fons is a person I never knew I was going to have put up, or we're going to have put up on a podcast.
VIP from Ghana.
VIP, we know. Magic System.
Heavy K in South Africa.
Heavy K in South Africa. Natalia Mabuso.
Actually, Natalia Mabuso. We were wrong on the whole episode. We said Mabuso and it was Mabuso.
Do you know, I can only remember that she... I think the name I saw was Mabuso.
Yeah, it's actually Mabuso, Natalia Mabuso, South African vocalist.
People should understand that we are not going to be perfect with names.
A few more names: the Peacock Guitar Band. I think episode 12. One of my very favorite episodes.
I really liked the 2090 Girl episode, the last one we did. I loved it so much. I feel like it was, you know, very exciting. It was a new vibe. I didn't know I was going to like it that much.
And I think I told you this. I think it was a little underwhelming. I wish it was
which
more.
Is weird, because
but then again that's the thing with people.
We can't
do something because there's so much.
Yes, no.
And then you feel like I should have. It's like being in a fight, in a cheating fight.
And then like and something then happens after you're like,
you
no,
have said all you
this.
And then in retrospect you're like, I should have done this. But then the good thing is there's always a chance to come back and talk about these people one more time. I'm sure Tunde Nightingale will be in the conversation. Maybe soonest, there would be a reason to talk about that, and then we'll make up for whatever part that we may have lost. I'm not feeling so well about this episode. I'm not feeling into it yet. What might be wrong? What could be my problem?
I think it's because of we had plans to do it a certain way, and now we had to change different routes now, because you know we had the normal like two pairs for us to touch, which is the second time it's happening,
and
we have
not done that
time.
in
like two episodes now.
The last episode was Nightingale.
We had two pairs at some point.
We dropped one,
but like halfway through, we're like, you know what?
We
can't do this. And we're really trying to keep up with the two pairs.
The one before that was two pairs.
Yeah, actually. Two pairs
was
before
that.
Was
that Heavy K?
Heavy K, yeah.
Odunsi, no, not heavy. It was Odunsi P Square. And why do we forget this thing?
Because we have so much that we do. We talk
I'm trying
about
to remember episode number 21. Odunsi P Square, Heavenly Father, help me. But then again, there's something about the episodes where they don't really connect to each other. If it was like Odunsi and Sansi, maybe it would have been easier to remember.
Yeah, it's because
we always
do the same people.
Long range.
We like to do a long range, and it's because we understand that we have different kind of people listening.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for them to
and
want
the concept
to hear.
Is the same.
Yeah, and you want to share.
Take a bit from this.
You want to hear something different. Yeah. So you want to hear something different, and you don't want to go on and talk about. I mean, this is not like an alter vibe thing, because I know a lot of alter guys actually do a lot of sampling.
Mm.
I mean, I just remember a lot of them. Yeah, a couple of episodes we have had to push forward because we're like, you know what, let's get to this level, then we talk about this. Yeah. I mean, we have a lot. For example, we want to talk Burna Fela.
There's a lot to talk about.
Raw Frogger and Raw Fela. I mean, people that know like a lot of sampling should
Kelly
know what sounds I'm talking
Fela.
About. Kelly Rowland Fela. You get that? Jacob Fela. So, I mean, that's like what?
Maybe Beyonce
13 episodes.
Fela.
Not maybe. Beyonce Fela.
Yeah.
Jay-Z Fela.
Speaking of Afrobeats, you sent me something recently. This guy. Napoleon.
Yeah, Napoleon the Legend. You know, something new, because there's some artists that we get to have, like, we have to talk about them. But we'll talk about Napoleon the Legend because we have, you know, a full episode to, you know, get around him and talk
the
so much. So like, you know, we have so much to talk about, people like the artists that are out of the country or out of like the African space, but they are still pushing Afrobeats the way it is.
Yeah.
So let's get to what we have today. Episode 23 is the episode we have on ground. Yeah, I felt like I was Black Kamari right now.
There's
nobody on ground. Okay, onto it. He says something about traveling all the way from 1947 down to 1960s and all the way back to 1999. This is something very exciting. Yinka Ifele, in the second album he had put out in 1999 called Sweet Experience.
Yeah.
The second song, or the first song that actually led that entire album, was called My Lifetime.
Go ahead.
All right, you want to go? Okay.
I like that. Now.
Yeah, because I actually thought you wanted to say something.
Please go ahead.
You know, this is not scripted, so basically, you know, you guys will understand what's going on.
That's cool.
So, yeah, that album happens to be like the album that, actually, even though Bitter Experience was kind of like a heartfelt album for a lot of people, because they understood
His story.
I mean, there were a couple of videos in Bitter Experience, the very first 3 minutes, that even if you don't know the man, there's this...
You have to.
I don't know how they did videos like that. I mean, there's this thing about originality of videos.
And this was 1998.
And it made you... Even, I don't know, but because I know his story so well, like, you get to see stuff like that and be like, oh, wow, this is...
Sad.
This is really sad. And then, Sweet Experience, it comes around and it's going to give us something spectacular. I mean, that time, he still used to try to stand... like old things, you know, to try and be like, but like he's not, like he doesn't do that so much anymore.
Yeah.
But like, you know, we saw a new vibe, and
the energy was different on
the energy was different on Sweet Experience, and I felt like that energy was what pushed him to do other stuff. Now people don't know this, but that song My Lifetime was actually sampled by another record.
I'm sure some people know, but maybe a lot of people.
Maybe some people, because I mean, you have to be really vast in listening to music, because most people that know Miriam Makeba, Miriam Makeba is the artist that was sampled, but most people that know Miriam Makeba only know Miriam Makeba for Patak Pata or the Click song. Now but the Click song is like
apparently Miriam Makeba does not exactly own that melody, right?
It
comes from someone from 1940
1947, two verses. Adam Salim, the original writer of
the song
Malaika and the melody. Now, if you go online, it's very hard to be able to put your hands on Adam Salim's record. But it's being said that what she did was a direct derivative of the sound. Now, the reason why we are going to be able to call it a sample is because something was added.
Okay.
In her case, which is a verse.
Okay.
So she's not like she just... I think a cover would have been a better name if she took the entire thing.
What language was this song in?
Swahili.
Tanzania to South Africa.
Yeah, Tanzania. Obviously, you know, Tanzanians also speak Swahili as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they speak Swahili as
East Africa to Southern Africa.
Yeah, they speak like Swahili is like, you know.
I really didn't know that.
Swahili is like.
Swahili, the.
No, South Africa is, you're hearing Zulu, Xhosa, you know. But Swahili is like language that reaches everywhere. Kenya, people
international.
Speak Swahili. They're not international, like African born. Because I don't know why. I don't know. Maybe it's Nigerian secondary schools that make you say, but when you say international, I just feel like you're seeing outside of Africa.
No, I'm getting a vibe that gives Swahili this.
So Swahili seems to be like the basic African language.
Language, yes. Yeah. That's what I'm driving at. Is there another language in Africa that cuts across at least 2, 3, 4, 5 countries? Hausa, right. Yes.
Hausa, yes. Hausa,
Hausa,
two countries,
I'm sure,
yeah. You're about to.
Yeah. Hausa, I'm sure, is in a number of countries in
Chad,
Northern Africa.
Yeah, Mauritania,
North Africa. But Swahili, it comes really recommended, so to speak, when you hear a word like Ndani.
Yeah. That's, I mean, basically, even people outside the continent, yeah, they refer to Swahili is like the thing they can use to connect
to Africa. To us.
Like, you know, most of the songs, I mean, for example, Mbube by Solomon Lane, that was sung in Zulu, like the Zulu language, yeah, vibe and everything. And Mosa, which is where Miriam Makeba is from. The Tosa person. That's the same person as I'm trying to remember somebody that is recent. Trevor Noah.
Oh, yeah. Yvonne Chaka Chaka.
Yeah. Yvonne Chaka Chaka 2. Yes, Yvonne Chaka Chaka 2.
There's a guy called Vusu Mbayo. Do you know him?
Yeah, yeah, I know Vusu Mbayo, but I can't remember anything.
Did I say Vusu or Vusi?
Vusi. Yeah,
Vusi Mbayo.
Do you know, please tell me something to connect.
He's a motivational speaker.
Yeah, I know him.
One of the biggest in Africa.
Bald guy. Bald guy.
Do you know what? Yeah, bald guy and built.
Built, yeah. I know him.
He's a global speaker. Now, yeah. I'm going to say this. This is unrelated, but yeah. I watch Vusi stuff and I try to find Nigerian stuff. Nigerian motivational speakers.
That are on that level.
Who speak like that? Let's not use
like
level.
Speak like.
Who speak like correct, him?
Like very.
Like who are well versed.
Nice, eloquent.
Who deliver, quote unquote. I really can't find them. Of course, there are.
Do we have. The thing is, you know what?
But I just can't.
Do we have motivational speakers that are on that level?
Maybe. I don't know why.
We have a lot of motivational speakers.
Yeah, of course. Let's not do this comparison, but. Personally, the way I see him, the way I connect to him, I just don't connect to other Nigerian speakers like that.
I think
that.
You plugged me onto him.
There's a guy called Samson Odegbami.
Okay.
Who had an impact on me when I was in NYC camp. He came to speak. He's a pastor and he really delivered for me, like straight to the point.
Yeah.
There's something they call eargasm. When you're listening to stuff and you really like it, like this is on
the
point.
Real stuff, yeah. This just popped into my head. Yeah. A story, side story that kind of helps us to connect back to Miriam Makeba. This is like, you know, side story. So like, just enjoy. Mm-hmm. Basically, during the time the Dutch first came in to, you know, try to colonize Africa,
the Boers,
and they sent back and all that, you know, they had to come back over and over again to get these people to work for them, but in the disguise of work with them. So Zulu people are known for being the warriors.
Yeah.
Xhosa people are known for being intelligent.
Okay.
Now, apparently, the Xhosa people would do a lot of things behind every other person's back because they didn't want to associate with them.
With the regular South Africans?
The warriors and, you know, the other guys, you know.
All South Africans including...
You know, all South Africans, including the white
international
guys. But at the same time, there was a belief that they had to go through, same Xhosa people to get the South Africans to, you know, submit to the other people. So back to that, I'm still saying that like threads same thing. Like, you know, if you read stories on Trevor Noah, we talk about how his mother used to work for white people, but she was still cocky. She was still very, you know, even I think he was saying something about
a good sense of pride.
Exactly. They hold on to that part of themselves. They're like, you know what, you can't call us shit. You can't treat us like shit. Yes,
I think that's the Igbos in Nigeria. There's a popular story about Igbos refusing to bow.
Yeah. Just do that. So even till date, Igbo people would not take it from anybody. But I think that is a personality thing.
Yeah.
So it cuts across different cultures. I don't think it's one person that holds on today. But we're just saying that this Xhosa people is a thing for them. Now, back to someone like Miriam Makeba.
Before we go back, let me defend my Yoruba people.
All right.
We too, we don't take SHXT. We don't take nonsense.
But that's why I said it cuts across all cultures. I don't think it's exclusive to one tribe. But I feel like in the South African vibe, which is why I was, when you talk about Vusi, that's why I want to bring it back to Miriam Makeba. Miriam Makeba, during her lifetime, she didn't take a lot of shit. She didn't take a lot of nonsense. And that kind of like was evident through her life.
And that's a signature of the Xhosa people.
At some point, she was exiled from the country.
So Miriam Makeba, signature of... Xhosa people, they don't take nonsense.
They don't take nonsense, like, and it's evident in her life. You could see, like,
is that where Mandela is from? Obviously,
I'm not sure.
Okay, I think
he combines two cultures. I think Xhosa is one of them.
Yeah.
So, from the time where apartheid was a big problem, she left the country. talking about the 60s. That's why if you see a lot of her performances, you'd see she was always talking to them as if she was not in South Africa.
Yeah.
It's because she wasn't in South Africa at the point. That was when she met people like Harry Belafonte, you know, Hugh Masekela, that was from South Africa, which she went on to marry at some point. She wasn't vocal at first because she was doing music because she loved it. That woman suffered a lot, basically, before she got to the music part. I mean, there was one part, he said that she had cancer at some point, you know, and a lot of things happened to her. You know, in the early days, she was really suffering. There was really, you know.
Two things I want to say. First of all, South Africans who might get to listen to this, we are not authorities on the issues that happen in South Africa, right?
Normal life.
We read up, we like the music, and we try to bring it to how the music influenced some of our folks here.
Yeah.
Ayefele in 99 could find a melody used by Maria Makeba in the 60s and made good music out of it.
Made 2 minutes of gloriousness, because I was going to point out that fact, but let me let you say what you want to say.
I just wanted to put that disclaimer.
Yeah.
We don't speak as authorities.
Yeah,
we just want to enjoy
basically
the music.
And
talk about this. Well, that's one thing. Second thing I wanted to say, I don't know how we're going to juggle the whole thing together so that we don't miss out some points. Talking about people who I would refer to as power women, special women in history, music.
Yes.
Miriam Makeba.
Number one.
Maybe not number one.
I think number one.
Not really
African,
about
African, I think number one.
Not really about numbers.
Okay.
If you know where I'm going, you probably wouldn't need to say numbers.
Okay.
Nina Simone.
Oh, okay.
Special people, special women, powerful music.
Yes.
What's common in history when it comes to black women making powerful music?
You know, I saw a post recently on Twitter, and they were talking about how black women used to be the rock stars of the days.
I mean, look at Patti LaBelle.
Talking about like Marini.
Aretha Franklin.
Aretha Franklin, Ella Fitzgerald, Big Mama Thornton. You know, these women were powerful. They knew the sound. They knew how to sing. Obviously, I've always felt like, you know, women, they sing way better than men. I don't know, like, this is like
there's a debate about that.
There's a personal thing for me. I just feel like women, they have this powerful voice, you know.
Is it like they sing better, or they have the persona?
They have the persona.
They deliver more.
Let me help you. Emotions.
I'd like to think this is what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
A lady like, what's her name again? I've forgotten. The Mtumi lady.
Oh.
Of course you can't forget. Don't be like me.
I think it's what you asked me.
Take your time, because I'm trying to make a point out of it. Mtume.
I feel so somehow right now.
It sounds like Eftahad or something.
No.
Not Eftahad.
Her name is Vanessa something.
That's not Vanessa.
Her name is Vanessa something.
There's a name we mentioned a lot on the Mtume episode. Juicy. The lady that delivered Juicy.
Yes, her name is Vanessa.
Let's push it forward. People already know who we're talking about. We just can't pick the name right now.
Yes.
The way she delivered the song.
Yeah.
I don't think a song like Juicy.
I remember she delivered that song in the dry voice.
And
she had a cough or something.
And the spirit of a song like that, I don't think anybody
like else, Barbara Withers as well.
Barbara Withers. Maybe that's
Silver
that's
Shadow.
Yeah. I'm trying to say that there is a power to women's maybe sexuality. There is a power to their personality that makes music sound differently. Men also try to be. Men are also sexual. Lionel Richie.
I mean, we have Usher.
Yeah.
Chris Brown.
Sam. Okay, maybe not.
We are going all the way back.
I'm just saying that.
We have Marvin Gaye.
There is a
Marvin
way.
Marvin Gaye was nasty.
So the debate about who sings better, I would think that women deliver music the way they do, because of the extra power that they have
inside
that men
them.
Have, something like that.
Yeah, I think it's like the emotional like part of them that comes out when they actually do sing those songs. That's why I feel like and that's true. If you check most of the powerful songs of the 60s, 70s, powerful songs, when I mean powerful songs, spiritual songs that are not basically spiritual. When I mean spiritual, that means they are not attached to religion.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Like talking about Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog.
Yeah.
I talk about that song a lot. Feeling Good, Nina Simone. Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog. I'm talking about Big Mama Thornton. At Last, Ella Fitzgerald. Aretha Franklin, Iris Spears City. You know, basically all the songs have something in common. They have a powerful tone. But a powerful tone that is calm.
Push it forward to Whitney Houston.
Whitney Houston, With Greatest Love of All.
Yeah.
That was a song that was done by somebody before. George Benson had done Greatest Love of All before.
But she made it again.
But she did it again, like a year apart.
Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton, wait. You know, we're going to call the names over and over. Like, we have a long list of them. And we're talking all the way down to, even when MC Light raps, when it comes to the rap genre, when MC Light raps on a record, there's a difference than when Tupac is rapping. Even though Tupac has, you know, the whole emotions, the
legendary,
and everything. But when you hear MC Light go on the rhymes and then she's trying to tell a story, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
This is a vibe.
We're seeing that with Rhapsody right now.
Exactly. Powerful. I mean, Rhapsody is just saying Chucha, and you're like, oh, that means something deep.
Yeah. To close up on this powerful thing, men and women.
No, powerful women, basically. Powerful women.
If we listed top 50 songs, are we saying there will be more women than men, possibly? Top 50 powerful, extraordinary songs in history.
There'll be a debate, though. I don't think there'll be more. I don't think there'll be more women.
Let's give ourselves assignment for that.
Yeah.
50 powerful songs from 1950.
It could be
to 2020.
That's spiritual songs that are not connected to religion.
Doesn't matter.
The moment you say connected,
if it's a powerful song, we know these songs.
Yeah.
That's Speechless by Michael Jackson.
That's Feeling Good.
Silver Shadow. That's Mariah Carey. What's her biggest song?
What's this song? Mariah Carey. I didn't think I'll put Mariah Carey on that level. I'm so sorry.
Ah, Mariah Carey has one.
Tony Braxton's
powerful
song. Tony Braxton's
song.
Don't Break My Heart.
Yes, songs like that. Myself
Celine
and Nelson.
Dion.
For episode 50, we'll come up with 50 powerful songs.
Yeah, 50 powerful songs. I'll do
and
that.
And tell you who has more. I'm sure the men will probably have 24 and women will have 26. I'll rig the election. So, that's episode 50.
Still on Mariah Makeba, I'm talking about powerful women.
Yeah.
She did a lot of songs and she did a lot of things that was different. Even though she was heavy in the 60s, we still had people, women, having to be a certain way to appear on camera. I mean, you see even the Gladys Knight and the Peeps. I'm sorry, I didn't say her name before. She's part of people that have why things so different. That's a powerful song.
Let's find
well.
A way to put a Nigerian woman in this conversation.
Yeah, I am. Okay, yes. Oyinkanwenu, Theodora Ifedu.
Most definitely.
You know, Evyedna Ogoli. She has that power too as well. I mean, there's this woman. I'm looking for one woman in the 50s. Her name. We called her name the last time on 2019 Girls episode.
Not Basile Alake.
No, not Basile Alake. We're talking about her. She used to do this. She had this.
Yeah, I know. So, I know now. I want
about.
To punish you, and I won't say it. Chrissy Essien Igbokwe.
Yeah, Chrissy Essien Igbokwe as well. You know, so we have a couple of artists like that. You know, that have that powerful
made impact.
And that's the thing. You know, apart from that, she had this thing with her appearance. People are to look a certain way to appear on TV.
Yeah.
Miriam Makeba broke that idea. Miriam Makeba would come up with an afro, not hair straightened,
and beats.
You know, not so much of beats. She can actually wear your dress, but she's not going to be too flamboyant. She's going to be well, like, looking well.
Small afro,
you know, and nothing is going on the afro. She's not going to try and strip.
Just the powerful
afro.
Voice and her,
powerful
and
voice.
Her presence.
No makeup. Apparently, makeup was a big thing in the 40s, too. In the 50s. Yeah, I read up on that as well.
There's something they call, in my local dialect, Papam Lulu.
Okay.
Have you heard it before?
First time.
Yeah, it means a stone that they used to do makeup back then. Yeah, it's like a stone where they will break it down, red stone, and that's what they apply on the faces.
Oh, okay.
Before Mary Kay came.
So my camera didn't do stuff like that, and then she went on. She had like an early influence into music from the age of 17. She was already doing songs. She had done a lot of songs, you know, and then towards the late 50s. She had one child born around that time, 50s to 60 era, and then she went on to do other songs, and then a couple of labels saw her and they wanted to push her because they saw that, you know, this voice is powerful. And as at the time she was leaving the country, she had done a couple of songs that were not necessarily attacking the government, but it was, you know, basically was, she said something one time, she said, I don't do political songs. I just do songs that mean a lot to me. I mean, you can't, we're supposed to sing about our experiences. I remember the great fella Nicola Kokuti said something in one of his interviews. He said, if you're going to sing a song, you sing about your environment. If you're a white person, you sing about how the world is great for you. But if you're a black person, you can't sing about how the world is great for you. You're going to sing about oppression.
Your reality.
Reality, what is going... I mean, you can't go on the street no matter how rich you are and just be. It's not possible. But when you come to an African person, it's a different kind of story. you're singing about suffering and smiling, which is what Fela did in one of his records, amazing records, Suffering and Smiling.
You're singing about no water, no light.
Exactly, no water, no light. You're singing about your insecurity in your environment. And that's your way of, because music now becomes a powerful tool.
And you're singing about love too, because you fall in love regardless.
Obviously, you're going to fall in love. That's important. Very important. If you don't want to fall in love, think about it. Change your mind. Fall in love is a beautiful thing.
Feel free.
Moving on. So, Miriam Makeba talked about certain times about things that were happening around her. Right? So, all these things, obviously, it's going to always sound like a political propaganda.
Yeah.
Because if you are saying, I mean, if you talk to me, I put myself as an example, and you're saying I should talk about things in my society, there's going to be a lot of pain. You understand? And I'm just really just saying what it is. I'm not trying to attack anybody. I'm just saying this is what it is. There's pain in my society. People are dying, you know.
Struggle.
People are poor. There's poverty. I mean, people are basically living in the abyss of penury. And you expect me to come and tell you how life is good and great? That's not possible. So she got attacked a lot. And when she went out, you know, there was this thing about, you know, her not coming back to the country. She married one of her first husband that was from, I think he was a Jamaican. They moved down to Guinea, got a Guinean visa. You know, they were there for a very long time.
Harry.
No, that wasn't, she had, no, she didn't marry Harry Belafonte.
Oh, okay.
Harry Belafonte was her mentor.
Oh.
Harry Belafonte saw her when she was going around in the US, when she was doing the first US tour. She was going around and he saw her record. She did Pata Pata. I think that that performance we saw was one of those performances that got Harry Belafonte. Harry Belafonte is still alive today.
Oh.
Amazing. Yeah, I think he's 90 this year. And, you know, he got her, you know, they went on to do a lot of albums together. I think four or five albums. Her biggest album in 1965 was with Harry Belafonte.
Won a
Grammy.
By him.
She won a Grammy. Yeah, produced that and they worked together. And he was on the record.
Grammy in what category? Maybe world music.
I think collaboration. No, not world. Collaboration.
Global.
Global music.
Yeah.
Because Harry Belafonte, as at that time, I don't think he was an American citizen yet. Because he too was from Jamaica, coming all the way to America to become. But he's referred now. I mean, man has been in the music scene for over like 50 years. So now he's referred now to as an American artist.
We talked about Miriam Makeba being married to Hugh Masekela.
Yeah, Hugh Masekela.
That was the name I was trying to remember when I said Harry Belafonte.
He wasn't the one she moved with.
So let's put context into this. How many albums did Miriam Makeba do?
On the albums that Miriam Makeba had, the ones that are most notable that people talk about all the time are 10 albums. So that's out of those 10 albums, one of them is a collaboration album. But she had lots of albums. We're talking about close to about 40. There's like a talk that is over 40.
More than 40
albums. More than 40 albums. But we have a collected version of like 44, 45.
Yeah.
And out of those ones, she had one with Nina Simone and Dizzy Gillespie.
What's Gillespie?
Dizzy Gillespie.
Dizzy Gillespie.
Gillespie.
What's that?
Probably Italian.
You know, that's the name of the person.
Yeah,
the producer.
No. She did that. Like she had two different collaboration albums.
Okay.
One with Nina Simone and one with this.
Who is this woman? Why is she Italian? And
yeah. You know what?
What would they be talking about?
It's one of those. I feel like it's one of those albums where, you know, trying to get a new audience.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. You want to get a new audience somewhere. And so, she was in France for a while.
I'd like to think it's not about audiences. It's probably about connection.
She actually did a lot of, like, you know, moving around.
Yeah.
She was out there. After the apartheid issue for a while, she wasn't at home for a long time.
She was everywhere.
Until Nelson Mandela came back into government.
The Sample Access. Administered by Boyega and Nelson.
Yo, hold on. The Sample Access. We'll be right back.
Iqirha lendlela nguqongqothwane Iqirha lendlela kuthwa nguqongqothwane Iqirha lendlela haya nguqongqothwane Iqirha lendlela kuthwa nguqongqothwane Yeah.
Miriam Makeba, she's now with the dead. She died in 2008. Very sad way to die, actually, because, you know, she was 76, and apparently she died after a performance. She had a heart attack during the performance, and that was the last time people heard from her. She had just finished singing. I think it was Patak Patak. She had just finished singing.
She did a lot of performing.
Yeah, a lot of performing. She was, you know, and yeah, this is one of the things I was going to say before. Thank you for saying that. She was a performing artist.
Hmm.
First of all, a lot of people who cannot place Miriam Makeba, if you remember the movie Sarafina,
yeah,
she was the mother of the main character.
Acted in the movie.
She acted in the film. She was the mother of the main character in Sarafina. So from that, anybody that's seen Sarafina, they don't need to...
That's a good place to cement her in history,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so basically she's like... And that was not the only movie she did. She did a movie way before. That was like in the early days when she, before she traveled out.
Mm.
And she had been active since 1960. So that's a whole lot of, you know, years. I mean, as at the time she died, she was already about 48 years in the business.
Mm.
So that she understood exactly what was going on. Do you understand? But like, I heard in the early days, I read up in the early days, she had a couple of issues with understanding how the money goes, how the money comes in. So there was a lot of... I'm broke.
Because, I mean, that kind of connects to Nina Simone.
Exactly.
She complained a lot about the labels.
Yeah, because...
What is wrong with the labels? Why are they always having...
Labels...
Even up to today.
Labels are created or were created to poach on you. That's why a label...
And make the most of you.
And it's, you can blame them and you can also not blame them. There are two perspectives.
But there's a lot of talk around... people being cheated,
it's
artists.
Because,
for instance, Miriam Makeba, where do the royalties go? I would like
exactly,
to
exactly, but Miriam Makeba has his daughter, so basically we feel like the royalties will get to our estate,
yeah.
So we feel like they are going to get most of the money.
They're doing fine.
Yeah, they're doing fine, so that's what we expect. Not like, I mean, when we're ever going to talk about Brenda Fassie, there's a whole lot about Brenda Fassie's estate not getting the right
And this
things.
Is global.
And this happens all the time. And it always is quite sad when it comes to African artists because, you know, like, they poach them a lot. They take them out of their comfort zone, you know, come as a record label. The record label that signed Miriam Makeba was RCA Victor. They came on, they saw Miriam Makeba. I mean, RCA Victor actually wanted to poach a lot of Nigerian artists around that era. The Orlando Julius, the people that were popping at the time, they were going to poach them, but they didn't poach them because this man wanted to know where the money was coming in from and how it was going.
I think this generation is... we're going back to talk about... have we talked about her death enough?
Well...
Just wrap up on that before we move on.
Right, okay. Her death wasn't the most pleasant.
Yeah.
Wasn't a good way to go. Mm. That I must say, because people might say, oh, it's exciting because she was doing what she loved.
Mm.
But I'm like, you know...
Life is unfair, so to speak. Look at Lucky Dube.
Yeah, Lucky Dube, for example.
And there are
all the good things, all the great things.
There are many other artists like that. So, yeah, let's just be... I don't know. Life is just like that.
Yeah, quite sad.
Speaking of RCA, African labels, first of all, I think I disagree with you on the fact that they poach African or they cheat African artists a lot more than others.
I'm not saying that they cheat African artists a whole lot more than others. I'm just saying...
Case comes to mind, TLC.
Yeah, TLC's story, not even just TLC. Toni Braxton.
There are many others.
Toni Braxton's stories, till today, I'm still like, how did they do this to this woman? I mean, this is somewhere that you know, there are some artists that, obviously, we know all artists work hard.
Mm.
But there are some artists that we can tell that this person is actually doing so much to work.
Mm.
You understand? Like, they are recording songs, they are putting out songs as much as possible.
Yeah.
During Toni Braxton's era, prime, everybody knew who she was. And she was dropping records all the time. And then we share years later that they made so amount from her. I should only get this percentage.
I don't want us to go too far with labels, but just to make a point on the fact that what it was...
There wasn't like an African thing.
Yeah.
I feel like Africans get pushed easily though.
We are going to create another episode out of this now, which is the Masters episode.
Yeah, yeah.
What are they buying? What are they selling?
Exactly. And we have a lot of
Birdman selling this person's Masters. This person is buying back their Masters. This person doesn't even have any Masters. I just hear Masters everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the reality, what we can get from that is that the conversation is more active than ever.
Yes.
A lot more people are alert. As an artist, you are like, okay. Because you weigh your options. Do I want to play it on the ground and own my small Masters? Or do I want to play big and sell my big Masters?
Yeah.
And win big regardless. Because whatever brand I'm that is made out of this deal is for me. whatever endorsement deals, whatever you sign, like you get to win regardless, yes, unless the deal is so bad,
is if you don't,
it affects
if you don't,
your future.
If you don't understand basically what you are doing, that's what happens.
The cases I don't like to see is the Majek Fashek situation.
There's
so many people. If you're a talented person, you have impacted the world on a global stage like that, you deserve all the funds, you deserve all the bread.
You know, yeah.
Let's move to Ayefele. Because the Masters episode will come, before we get to 50 or maybe more. Yinka Ayefele in 1999 made Sweet Experience one of the albums out of like 27 albums that he has done. And Sweet Experience was number 2, which I'm sure was very significant to his career.
Very significant.
First one was Bitter Experience. You did like an opener on that when we started the show. But Sweet Experience started with My Lifetime, blah blah blah, yes, which is
the song that sampled
Miriam Makeba's Malaika.
Yeah,
sampling Adam Salim. Adam Salim.
1945.
What's the title of that song?
Malaika 2.
Malaika 2.
Yes.
Malaika means an angel. My angel. And Ayefele making that, essentially making a statement that I'm giving God
my lifetime,
the whole of my life, because he deserves it, because there is really nothing I could do with it anyways. Let me serve God with
life. And when you compare the lyrics, quite different, because I don't think we talked about the lyrics during our
You can touch on that briefly.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do right now. Malaika, just the song loosely means my angel, I love you, I want to marry you, but I can't because you're
that's Nakupenda Malaika.
I want to marry you, but
get
I can't because your bride price is a problem for me.
It's too high,
It's too high. But basically, what it actually means, I think he just used bride price because he was trying to be subtle.
Okay.
What it meant actually.
This is the original composition from Adam Salim.
Adam Salim had a girl he was going to marry.
It's probably a fiction, though.
It was a fiction. This is a true life story.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why this song had so much emotion.
Wow.
In the early days.
Wow.
Which was why I feel like that was why Miriam Makeba thought, okay, this was a song I could jump on before she made it like become bigger,
yeah,
you know, than it was. I mean, we have a couple of songs that have been done like that. Elvis Presley, Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog, was bigger because Elvis Presley took the song from Big Mama Thornton.
Susan Vega and those DNA guys.
The DNA guys that came together to make a song out of nothing.
And then David Guetta made a blast.
Exactly. So, My Angel, the story, he fell in love, wanted to marry, but the girl couldn't marry him because he wasn't average man. He wasn't rich.
He no get.
He didn't have enough to pay the bride price. I'm very sure because it's Tanzanian, so I'm guessing maybe the bride price might be a big deal. I was talking 1947. I'm sure
dark
money
days
wasn't entering in for musicians at that point. So basically, you understand that this guy doesn't have so much money. So yeah, you understand where it's coming from. I mean, the song was produced by a Kenyan, so that's why there's this African element in it. There's this connect. And again, another Kenyan went on to do his own version, right? That version of that song became very big. That version was released in 1963 by, I don't know whether he was a real doctor, but it was called Dr. Fadhili Williams.
Dr. Fadhili Williams.
I'm sure I played that record for you.
Yeah, Kenyan.
So yeah, it sounded
a little more polished.
Even though it was released in 1963. And now this is where it comes beautiful. The first time Miriam Makeba sings the song in like
performance
or like first time ever she's going to sing the song was in 1969, and she didn't do Fahidili's
version.
She did the original version, which had a lot of soul and emotion in it.
What is our best guess as to how music could travel from Tanzania or Kenya to South Africa?
Swahili,
she traveled
language.
Radio.
And you know, we also said something about how
was that radio then? I don't know.
Yeah, there was radio.
There was radio in 69.
Oh, come on, 1940s, there was radio.
Okay.
The thing is, she was very
well traveled.
Apart from well traveled, at that point, she was a listener, and then she loved the song, and then she decided to do it again. And then we have our own Yinka Ayefele. Now, one thing I want to point out about this song is this song did not last for like 2 minutes,
because
Baba switched.
Just 4 verses.
Yeah, like, oh, Jesus. I feel like Yinka Ayefele.
That's
right
on
now.
The part. The song that followed this song, this is my lifetime's verse, is Blessed Assurance.
Oh, wow.
Which is a hymn, by the way.
Yes.
Of course, everybody knows.
And that's
Blessed
why we
Assurance.
Thought for a long time that it was a hymn.
Yeah.
Do you remember when we started researching this first?
Are we really sure it's not a hymn?
On and on and on. It's not a hymn.
So yeah, Ayefele made a song about that. The meaning that Adam Salim had for the song,
yeah,
is it different from Maryam Akeba's?
No, she only added a verse to it, and the verse just helped to like cover the song in entirety.
She protected or she maintained the spirit of the song.
She maintained the spirit of the song.
Ayefele changed it
entirely.
To, of course, the melody is the same.
Yeah, melody is the same. The vibe is the same. Progression is the same.
Just the meaning of the song.
Yes.
Thanking God and committing his life to serve God, essentially. If I give you my life, you will take care of me.
Yeah.
You will never, ever...
You will never, ever let me
That's
down.
How you do. By the way, Ayefele, Yinka Ayefele is... If we want to describe his genre, I think this is a part where I should do some talking.
Yeah, yeah.
Nelson has been talking all day. This genre of music in Nigeria is popular mostly among the Yorubas, which is gospel tungba. Tungba means pop, essentially. Pop music that's, you know, elements of when people were doing the slow, maybe Sonny Ade synchro system. People like Sashino Peters came around and like, yo, let's step this, let's push this forward. After that, we started to see, perhaps around the same time, the Alexitos.
Yeah, same time.
The people that we call open eye guys.
Yeah, the open eye guys.
People that open eye to Western music and domesticated Western music here.
Ecstasy.
And then we started to see in the 1990s, people who...
The 1990s, we had the Remedies.
Yeah, who made American hip hop, domesticated American hip hop, essentially, and it progressed up until, you know,
Dizzy K. Fowler. That's the name we should put out to.
It continued to progress. Meanwhile, something just popped into my head right now. While some people were preserving Alujo, because Ayefele, we can easily say stems from a Tungba energy that may have been pioneered by Shino Peters. That Alujo vibe.
But was that it? I think it was diluted. It wasn't the same. You know, it wasn't the same.
Ayefele's signature is Alujo.
Is that what we call it?
Tungba, yes.
Eh.
Ayefele didn't make as much slow songs as he made fast songs. That is Alujo. Jegede Atonso. The gong signature. Yeah. That is dance. What everybody now does.
I love Yinka Ayefele songs though.
Owambe music. Even if it, okay, there will be slow songs that would last 7 minutes. There's one I like. The Lord is my shepherd. There are a lot of songs like, but the one that will lead the album would be an Alujo song. Yeah. Oh say, oh yes, we. Oh, that energy is Ayefele's signature. So
this is us coming out like as Nigerians fully.
Yeah,
this is something that relates to every single person.
Pop music. I mean, Ayefele charges, I don't know how much for whatever events where he plays.
Maybe a million.
He's like the top guy when it comes to charging for Owambe. That's the whiskey of Owambe people.
Yeah.
I was watching a video recently. A couple of days ago, Davido was at an event where Ayefele was performing.
Yeah, and he gifted Ayefele 1 million naira.
Is that what you saw online?
I didn't even read through.
I saw a stack of 1,000 naira bills.
Yeah,
the stack actually looks maybe perhaps more than 1 million.
Oh really?
Yeah, he held it and then he took the mic from Yinka Ayefele, did like 5 minutes of vibing, sang his songs on the band's orchestra and all that. Beautiful to see.
Okay, did you sing any Yinka Ayefele song?
Yes, he did. I can't remember.
I can't remember. Sorry, this is a small fan moment, but if I was ever given the opportunity, I would want to do at least one or two songs. Like, I'm like, okay, wait.
But it was so cute to see.
Let's do this together. Yeah,
I was trying to make a point about some people maintained Pakurumo by Wizkid stems from the Owambe energy.
Yes, it does.
Which connects to Ayefele, connecting to
Tunde Nightingale.
All the way back.
Before that,
Shino Peters.
Then you take it back to KSA, Chief.
Which is the Enomilowo.
Yeah.
Owambe energy.
Yeah, yeah. Enomilowo.
But at the same time, Wizkid could be on a song with Ella May.
Mm-hmm.
Doing.
That's what you call range.
Yeah. It could be on a song with Cardinal Official.
That's what you call
doing
range.
Rapping for My City.
Yeah.
It could be on a song with Chris Brown. Doing Shaba.
African Bad Girl.
That's range. There are other guys who go all the way to New York rap vibe.
Mm-hmm.
YC sometimes could do that.
Yeah.
There are guys in Nigerian music space who say the way Alexito, Venom Arioge brought down lakeside type music, domesticated it in Nigerian lingo, there are still guys in this time and age doing that. So there is a lot of diversity, which is so amazing to appreciate, amazing to see in Nigerian music. Tenny made a song like Askamaya, which you can connect to Owambe Energy, but also made a song with Lalipo called Let Me Know, which is essentially a trap energy, a trap song. So I love the diversity. I mean, we can accommodate a lot of genres in the Nigerian music parlance.
Also, Yinka Ifele as an artist has to be one of those artists, you know, you respect him so much. The man has been through a lot. If we're talking about Yinka Ifele, I know some other time I'm going to need to, because I know there are a couple of songs that he did that he sampled, that is obvious that he sampled. So maybe some other time I'm going to come back on him, so we can have like a proper moment, because he's one of those artists that, you know where we have a couple of artists that we listened to growing up, that we had no choice but to listen to. Chief Ebenezer Obey, every house, as far as you grew up in a Yoruba setting,
you should know Ebenezer Obey.
At some point, your house, except you guys are really bad people.
Even if you don't want to buy the music, you hear it on
your
radio.
Your neighbor will play it, or your neighbor or your radio will play stuff like that. Radio. And then we also had people like Barbara. You know, Barbara, too, at some point.
That's what I grew up on.
Was popping. You know, Shola listening in her early days, like her early days.
Shola listening in AJ World. Shola listening in
her early days. Tokpe Alabi before she became Mama. Tokpe Alabi now.
Do you know Esther Igbekele? You don't.
I think I do.
Yeah, she's a Yoruba. I think I do. Yoruba, I think I,
I know Esther Igbekele. Yeah, I know that name. And also, like, there are a lot of artists like that people grew up on. Although, I think...
You should know Yetunde Are, obviously.
I know Yetunde Are. So, I mean, my parents were big on gospel. Yeah. Anything gospel that, you know, vibes and everything. So, Yinka Ifele was that guy. I mean, there was this song he did. It's like a moment for me. There's this song did about, I don't know whether I remember Ademola Adekunle.
I know the song. This album was very popular.
Now, Ademola Adekunle's children, like, you know, he had a lot of wives. You know,
I don't know the man. I just hear
He had a lot of wives, like three.
It's like Adebutu Kessington. Sure you have heard that name before.
Yeah, I have. Kessington is like a big.
When you hear Obey, the people, the Yoruba elites,
they have this.
They have a signature in Nigerian music.
Yeah.
Sonny Ade talked about Obalikpede. Is a king in Lagos, I think.
Yeah.
Tunde Nightingale made a song for Oba Oni Ofife. Adesoji Aderemi.
I heard that song.
Ebenezer Obey, Arise Kola Alao. There's a particular wax
song.
So if you are a rich man,
members?
No, not board members. That's Oma Akele board members.
Okay,
that one.
Because I remember there was one particular song that he went at it.
But there's a particular album, Otami Deyin Deyin.
So,
if you're a rich man in Yoruba history,
you have to get,
definitely you have there's to get an artist.
You have to get your name on the record.
I have friends who have a fantasy of ensuring that Kwamwan must play at. You will hear these conversations like Juga everywhere. Kwamwan must play at my wedding.
Yes,
I must spend money for Ifele someday. Exactly. That's like a dream for some people. So, it's like part of the Yoruba dream, not Nigerian dream.
I knew a couple of his children, like three of them. Oh. The house where I grew up in.
Wow.
The woman that owned the house I grew up in, her daughter got married to Adekunle at some point. So, her children, I grew up with some of them.
This is a big businessman, right?
Yeah, I was big, you know, had lots of money. I mean, his children were in UK at some point. They just came back to Nigeria. They were going to the best schools in Lagos. So, like, they were a big deal, basically.
Good place to wrap up, Ayefele. Someday we'll talk about Yonda.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, have we confirmed this? Most definitely.
Have we?
So there's a Yonda sample. There's a Yonda song that sampled.
So I'm going to come back to that. I like that because I feel like we should do that maybe Q3 because so that we can actually talk proper.
Yeah.
Maybe let Yinka Ifele, as Miriam Makeba has led today, we'll let Yinka Ifele lead the next one.
Yeah, because I mean, it's a medium ago. Good place to wrap up.
Yeah,
Yinka Ifele went from being an intern journalist in 1997. He worked at some point at FRCN Ibadan.
Yeah, I remember.
From being a journalist, made jingles for radio.
Yeah, I think that
made music for radio. It wasn't really official music.
It was just
radio jingles the way we do now. I'm trying to say that Ayefele is the dream of the journalist. Going from internship, being a journalist, to being a mogul.
Yeah, because he's actually
owning
a
syndicated radio network in Nigeria. It's a big deal for you to move from that to this.
And he said that he's worth $1.4 million. And I accept. Normally, I would say, hey, where did the money come from? Or when you look at someone like this, longevity.
Yeah, musician.
And he has been doing this for a very long time. I would say something about him being up there in terms of you want your party to be the greatest.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know who you are. You tell me you are bringing Kwam or Yinka Ifele, that place is going to be the bomb.
Yeah. Speaking of Owambe parties, people like P-Square,
yeah,
they get gigs in Ethiopia, get gigs in Uganda, playing for the biggest people in those countries.
I mean, you don't want P-Square to play Ama, still that special man.
In Nigeria, you have King Sonny, they still get
he still gets booked.
Ayifele, obviously.
Yeah.
People like...
I don't know, I don't think Ebenezer
sometimes anymore. Sometimes. Okay. I don't really know about now. But yeah,
at the time it was the greatest.
Kwam One, obviously.
Kwam One, that one on his steady.
People like Mega 99.
Yeah, Mega.
Who are the younger Owambe guys
this
that we
guy
know?
This guy has a very rough voice, like that of Orlando Owo. His name is Deji something. That's his real name.
Do you know Daily Bravo?
That's the person I always talk.
There's Daily Dara nowadays.
Daily Bravo. That's the person that has the rough voice.
There is a guy called Lekon Remilekunimos. These guys are, you know, mixed gospel.
I've heard that Owambe. I've been in party with
production credits. Episode number 23 has been amazing. What do we have?
All right,
this is going to be weird because a lot of it is not like today's production system, right?
Yeah. So there's no production, like, we can't give you, but we can tell you exactly what we had. Mirema Keba was a single. It was released in 1974.
Okay.
The song Malaika, and the first time it was performed was 1969. The first time the record was put out was 1972. The first time it was in an album, which was part of a compilation album in 1974. That's when the album
really
that had the song in was released. Then we have Ayifele, My Lifetime is the name of the song, part of the album Sweet Experience from the year 1999. I feel like Ayifele has a band.
Obviously.
So
I know Jagede Atosan, if I don't know anybody else.
Oh, okay.
Jagede Atosan are the two talking drummers.
Oh, okay. So like those guys are... You know, they have been there forever.
Yeah.
Same guys, I don't think they ever changed.
They changed at some point. I heard a story about one of them getting lost in America after a performance. I don't know how legit this is.
I want to hear stories like this.
I don't know, but I'm sure they probably made up again.
Yeah.
But like we mentioned, Fela changing bands, Obey changing instruments. Sonny Ade changing bands at some point too.
Obviously, there has to be a change at some point.
Yeah, there has to be a change.
When
so, yeah. Yeah, the oldest guy, any traces of production
for Adam Salim?
Yeah,
it was the number, it was a Kenyan. His name was Frank something. I can't remember the other name.
Produced,
I can't pronounce the other name.
What are the elements embedded Kenyan in that song? Just guitar?
No, not so much. Just guitar. It was just a guitar.
There is no
a guitar and a bit of piano.
Okay,
so that was just it. It was like a dry tune.
Wow,
it's like Solomon Linda's Mbube. Mbube.
What's that about?
That's Solomon Linda's Mbube. My Lion Sleep Tonight. That was that's a new.
That's another,
an episode entirely.
Yeah.
But like anybody that understands Mbube, if you have seen Coming to America, the first song that comes up in the original Coming to America 1988 movie. That's what I'm talking about.
Good place to wrap up. Follow us on social media. The handles will be in the show notes. Follow the Sample Access Pod on Twitter and support us. Tell your friends about the podcast, and we'll see you next time, Nelson.
This is where we drop the songs for you. Mary Makeba Malaika, and also the one composed by Adam Salim, Malaika, and Ayifele's My Lifetime.
That kind of rhymes properly.
Yeah.
We out.
Gentlemen, this next song comes from Tanzania. It's a song in Swahili, a love song. It simply says, Malaika nakupenda malaika, which simply means, I love you, my angel. Malaika nakupenda malaika.
Administered by Boyega Nelson.
Yeah, let me try that.